You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 284 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, and to begin the week, it's Sunday evening into Monday morning, as you guys will be listening to this, and a couple things to hit on today's podcast. Of course, we're going to cover the game that took place on Saturday, even though it was not the most fun game to cover slash watch, but a couple of items of at least a little bit of note here before we get to the game itself. First of all, the Hawks announced on Sunday that they were going to send Tyler Dorsey, the rookie second-round pick, to the G League and the Erie BayHawks, which, of course, is the Hawks G League affiliate, and Dorsey actually made his G League debut on later on Sunday afternoon in a loss. Erie's actually winless on the season, which doesn't really matter necessarily from a developmental standpoint, but it's just something to file away for the future. But Dorsey played 20 minutes off the bench for the BayHawks, had 16 points and 5 rebounds, made 2 of 3 from 3, which is a nice encouraging sign. I saw a little bit of this game, did not see the entire game, but Dorsey looked fine. Obviously, he should be looking good in that league, and he did play well in that league. But not a huge surprise to me. I talked a lot in the lead-up to the season. If you're a new listener, you would not have heard this, obviously, but after the draft and throughout July and August and September, I mentioned on several occasions that I thought Dorsey was going to be spending some time in Erie just because of the fact that the Hawks were pretty stacked up. Once DeAndre Bembry got hurt and Dorsey was still basically unable to play, at least in order to crack the rotation, that was sort of the writing on the wall for me that he was going to be spending at least some time down in Erie, because Bud has routinely, you know, gone with 2 and even 3 point guards rather than playing Dorsey. There was one game in which he actually appeared sort of in regular rotation minutes, but aside from that, it's basically been only garbage time for Dorsey, and if not for all the injuries the Hawks have, he probably would have been inactive on at least a handful of occasions. So not a big surprise here, not an indictment of him either. You know, this is a second-round pick, a guy who I did not think was going to be ready to play right away from the Hawks' standpoint, and that, you know, I don't want to say it proves to be the case now, but certainly seems to be looking in that direction based on the fact that the Hawks are as beat up as they are. He still couldn't get in the rotation, so nothing bad here with Tyler Dorsey. It's just sort of the writing on the wall there, and you know, I didn't love that pick when it happened. I think Dorsey has a path to become an NBA rotation player if everything goes right, and I'm not saying that anything's gone wrong to this point in time, but he needs to go down, get some seasoning in the G League, work on some skill stuff, especially defensively. That's my big concern with Dorsey, and we'll definitely have an eye on him down there. If anything crazy happens, we'll definitely fill you guys in here. I'm going to be watching as much as I can of him in the G League, because for the most part, I'm not going to be watching a ton of Erie this year, but if guys from the actual roster are down there, then I will check that out, and I got to watch a little bit of the game on Sunday as a result of that. By the way, Josh Maget, at the helm of the Erie offense, had a big game on Sunday, 20 points and 11 assists. I had 4 of 7 from 3. Majet's numbers have been fantastic in the early going in Erie. Not a big surprise. He's a very, very good G League basketball player, so not a big surprise there, but he is one of the guys that obviously is tangentially related to the Hawks roster given the two-way status. So he's probably the best player on the roster down there in the G League right now. Unless you count Dorsey, of course. I think Dorsey is clearly a better player slash prospect than Maget is, but at the same time, Maget's much more established and you know, probably a high-end guy in terms of the G League. So just something to file away for the future. Last thing before we get into the actual game on Saturday is that sort of a weird report emerged on Sunday afternoon from Mark Berman of the New York Post. Just a little bit of background here. Mindaugas Kuzminskas, that's a very difficult name to say, as you might imagine, has been on the Knicks the last couple of years, but he was waived on Sunday by the Knicks to, because in short, the Knicks had to create a roster spot for Joakim Noah to come back. And Kuzminskas was the guy who was basically placed on the chopping block ahead of guys like Ramon Sessions, etc. But Kuzminskas is a 28-year-old forward from Europe. Played last year as a rookie, was reasonably effective and in some limited time with the Knicks. But at the same time, sort of the headliner here is that Berman reported that if he is able to clear waivers, the Lakers, Bulls, and Hawks are expected to have interest in adding him to their squads. Just for a little bit of background here, Berman reported back in 2016 in July that the Hawks had and that the Hawks and the Lakers actually were the runners-up when it came to pursuing Kuzminskas in free agency. So I guess not a big surprise there, but at the same time, it was a different regime in the front office there. It was obviously the Mike Budenholzer, Wes Wilcox tandem at the top of the front office, whereas now it's obviously Travis Schlenk. So I'm not sure what to do about this report. I mean, it's one of those things where the Hawks don't have a roster spot right now. They'd have to a couple of different ways that they could add Kuzminska if they wanted to. The Hawks could apply for a hardship waiver. They have had so many guys injured this season that if you have four guys or more out for three games or more, you can apply for a hardship waiver to be able to add to your roster without having to cut anybody. The Hawks haven't done that to this point that we know of. So that's just one way that they could possibly add Kuzminska if he were to clear waivers. Also, the Hawks could, in theory, move on from Nico Brusino. He would be the obvious guy. You know, he's been buried all season long, and he's not under control beyond this season. So if the Hawks just elected to basically sign Kuzminska in place of Brusino, they could definitely do that by cutting Brusino. The Hawks do have their room mid-level exception if they wanted to use that on Kuzminska, but they have to have a roster spot in order to do that. So just something to follow away here. He did play well last year at times in New York. I would not be in a huge rush to go sign him because he is an older guy. He's 28. I'm not sure he'll be on the next good Hawks team as a solid contributor there. But you know, player for player, he's probably better than Nick Brusino right now. So if the Hawks care about that, something they could certainly do and look at. But I would not necessarily be jumping into that because Brusino is so much younger. It probably has more upside, to be honest with you, even if clearly the Hawks are not enamored with Brusino at this point because he can't get on the floor right now with the Hawks as beat up as they are. But it's just something to kind of just get out there because that was a report that was circulating. I was asked about it and wanted to comment and wrote about it a little bit on Peachtree Hoops, basically what I just shared with you guys here. But Kuzminska is a guy who the Hawks have had reported interest in before, so they could happen again. But again, it's important to note that it was a different front office, so I would not be jumping to think that Travis Schlenk is necessarily involved. But he certainly could be if he wanted to be at this point in time. Before we get into the actual game from Saturday, I do want to remind you guys to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play or TuneIn Radio, wherever you want to listen to the show. Please go ahead and do that. I certainly would recommend that. It makes it everything easier and life easier for us as well as you. That way the podcast just appears in your feed. You don't have to click around, do any of that stuff. And the entire Locked On Network will really appreciate you guys checking out as many shows as you would like. Obviously, there's a Falcons show that I would certainly encourage a lot of Hawks fans that are also Falcons fans to check out. Falcons got a big win on Sunday. So if you're excited about the Falcons, check out that show and any other NBA / NFL show that you wanted to get out there. Please go ahead and do that now. With that, we can move to the game, obviously, from Saturday night. I took a little bit of a 24-hour hiatus and wanted to post a show on Sunday. Actually, glad I didn't, based on the Dorsey and Kuzminska stuff. But still, this was not exactly the most exciting game to talk about. The Wizards knocked off the Hawks by a final score of 113-94. The Hawks are now 2-11 on the season and 2-7 away from Phillips Arena. For the most part, this was a very competitive game in the first half. The Hawks were outscored 20-19 in the opening quarter and went into halftime with a 7-point deficit. And really, by the end of the third quarter, it was still a single-digit game, but Washington basically put the pedal to the metal in the fourth, scored 37 points. Things got out of hand in a hurry in that fourth quarter. There were some positive and negative signs before that. In the first quarter, everybody that was watching the game was sort of lamenting the fact that the Hawks were not winning by more points or really just winning at all because the Wizards opened up the game by missing their first 8 3-point attempts. That was an ominous sign that they were still able to hang around in the game while doing that, and that ended up being kind of what happened here. As the Wizards actually won this game by 19 while shooting 7 of 24 from 3, where the Hawks shot 14 of 33. If that was more normalized on either side of the floor, it would have been a much more lopsided defeat for Atlanta. Still, there were some positive signs. There were some negative signs as well. The biggest positive sign for me was Malcolm Delaney playing well again in the first half. He was 4 for 4 and 3 for 3 from 3, had 11 points in that first half, did not play a ton in the second half, and as a result did not really pile on those stats, but I thought that was a very, very encouraging time for him. Again, playing off the ball with Isaiah Taylor, but he was probably the lone bright spot in terms of individual performances. Marco Bellinelli was also very efficient offensively, 15 points on 8 shot attempts, and made 4 of 7 from 3. I think he played reasonably well, even though he was a minus 16. I would not exactly pin that on him in the spot. Aside from that, though, there was not a whole lot of positivity to be thrown around. I guess Torian Prince had the best stat line of anybody else on the floor, 19 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists, and 3 steals in 34 minutes. But Mike Budenholzer did not seem pleased with Torian Prince's performance. There was a moment during the game where he committed a technical foul and loafed on defense when he was arguing with the referee, and Mike Budenholzer called timeout and basically reamed him in front of live cameras. That was not exactly the greatest thing in terms of visuals for Taurean and Prince. And then after the game, Bud did not exactly give a ringing endorsement in a televised interview with Fox Sports. He was asked about Prince. He didn't kill him by any means, but you could tell he was not pleased and sort of watching his words and mentioned consistency of effort, basically, with Taurean and something to file away there. I didn't think he was awful in terms of play, but that was a really bad sequence for Taurean. Not the first time he's been in sort of the doghouse a little bit with Budenholzer. Last year, he was sent to the G League, presumably in part because of the fact that they were not getting along all that well, just because it's not necessarily a personal thing, but there was times when it was clear Bud was frustrated with Prince. That went away later in the year as he was, of course, the entrenched starter in the playoffs. But, you know, Taurean is not going to be going anywhere this year, obviously, as he's sort of the only small forward on this roster that Bud trusts right now at the moment. But not a great performance from him, even though he led the team in scoring with 19 points on 6 of 12 shooting and made all of his threes, not all of his three, but four of six from three. So offensively, he was okay at times, but not a great performance overall, even though the stats might tell a slightly different story with Taurean Prince. Elsewhere, the rest of starting five was kind of brutal. Get Bazemore had some moments, had 13 points on 12 shots, but you know, two assists, three steals, but not a ton else going on there. Dennis Schroeder had his worst game of the season by far, 7 points, seven rebounds, five assists, and four turnovers, but was 2 of 16 from the floor in this game, 0 of 3 from three. And you know, it probably wasn't quite as bad as that number would indicate, the 2 of 16 number, but defensively his effort waxed and waned, and offensively he just had no legs. It seemed like he was very, very sluggish. That was probably the best way to describe it. It wasn't back to back, and he had played a lot, of course, the night before, so it's going to happen in the NBA, but I thought he was quite bad in this game. With Dedmon, 13 points, 8 rebounds, he was okay, did have 5 turnovers, which is not what you want to see from Dwayne Dedmon without having the ball in his hands all that often. Luke Babbitt kind of fell to earth a little bit with 5 points and 6 rebounds, but was 2 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 5 from 3, had 3 turnovers in his own right. On the bench, John Collins was not great at all, had foul trouble all night long, was very, very frustrated by that, it seemed. Just didn't have his trademark bounce and explosiveness on either end of the floor. Had 2 points, 3 rebounds in 22 minutes, was 1 of 4 from the floor. You know, I don't want to rip on John. It was a back-to-back situation where, you know, rookies, he's got to get used to playing back-to-backs and, you know, playing probably more than he normally would despite the foul trouble, just because of the fact that the Hawks are so shorthanded in the front court right now, because, again, Ursula Misova and Mike Muscala both were out in this game, and leaving the Hawks with only 3 healthy sort of rotation big men. Tyler Cavanaugh did appear for a limited portion of time, had his first bucket as a professional, so shouts to Tyler Cavanaugh for scoring in this game. But you know, basically, again, only 3 rotation big men for Atlanta, and that sort of is starting to take its toll, I think, a little bit. Finally, Isaiah Taylor had 6 points and 2 assists. I thought he was okay off the bench, 2 of 8 from the floor, though. That wasn't as efficient as he has been in recent weeks, which isn't a huge surprise. He's going to have to regress at some point. He's not going to be this hyper-efficient guy offensively forever, and I think that was sort of some of the signs here. But I think he did play reasonably well against Washington on the road. You know, the Wizards sort of sleptwalked in the first quarter in typical Wizards fashion, but they're a much better team than the Hawks. They finally sort of just turned it on, and the Hawks did not have another gear to go to, as Washington had the night off before, where the Hawks were playing on the second game of back-to-back, and that was very clear in terms of the energy and the sort of explosiveness in that fourth quarter. So nothing huge to take home from this game, aside from just a little individual things. The Hawks didn't play well offensively. A 93.8 offensive rating is brutal. Defensively, 112.8. It was much better than that until the fourth quarter, but it all counts, as they say. So not a great performance on either end for Atlanta, and that's one that we'll certainly hopefully be forgetting as quickly as possible. The Hawks do play again on Monday against the New Orleans Pelicans on the road. It looks as if Mike Muscala is going to be out again. He's doubtful, and Ursula Yonasova did not make the trip to New Orleans, so same sort of shorthanded situation for Atlanta. And in this spot, they're going to be taking on a team with 2 high-level sort of all-NBA caliber big men, and again, only 3 guys in the front court, one of those being Luke Babbitt, who probably don't want guarding Anthony Davis or Boogie Cousins on any reasonable night. So going to be a very, very vital game for John Collins and Dwayne Dedmon to stay on the floor with foul trouble to avoid that at all costs. And yeah, sort of a worry spot, because New Orleans, I'm candidly not the biggest believer in the Pelicans this season, but at the same time, they do have 2 of the top 20 players in the NBA, and they're at a spot right now where the Hawks are very weak beyond their top 2 or 3 guys. So, yeah, not the greatest matchup in the world here for Atlanta, but listen, they could certainly bite New Orleans if they play well, because the Pelicans are susceptible to some weaknesses. They don't have a ton of wings. Obviously, their wings are kind of brutal, honestly, and on the perimeter, it's basically just Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore as their competent perimeter players at this point in time. So, if they don't bludgeon the Hawks inside with Davis and Cousins, the Hawks could have some success elsewhere, and even if they're going to be a pretty significant underdog on the road on Monday. So thanks for listening. As always, everybody, it's going to do it for today's show, and we'll be back again to wrap up that game in New Orleans on Monday evening into Tuesday morning. So that will be the next show. Again, I remind you guys to subscribe to the show. Thanks for listening for always. Thanks for listening as always, I should say, as I can speak here late on this Sunday evening. But thanks again, everybody. We'll see you guys tomorrow.